Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Presbyterian Congregation outside the 12th Hour. In the Elgin, Texas, today is August 30, 2023, or the 15th day of Elul 2027. We will start our sacred service today with a song entitled Joy to the World. I'm going to sing an a cappella. Joy to the world, the Yahshua is come. Let earth receive her King. Let every heart prepare him room. And heaven and nature sing. And heaven and nature sing. And heaven and heaven and nature sing. Joy to the earth, the Savior's reign. Let men their songs employ, while fields and floods, rocks, hills, and plains. Repeat the sounding joy, repeat the sounding joy, repeat, repeat the sounding joy. No more let sins and sorrows grow, nor thorns infest the ground. He comes to make his blessings flow. For as the curse is found, for as the curse is found, for as the curse is found. He raised the world with truth and grace, and made the nations prove the glories of his righteousness, and wonders of his love, and wonders of his love, and wonders of his love. We're in the middle of the chapter 20, I believe, or 19. It says that chapter 19 is the return to Canaan. This is part number 2. Joseph, for his integrity, for his tempter, revenge herself by accusing him. Let's do a little review on what we're reading here. This is Patriarchs and Prophets. We're on page 218. It says, Joseph and down in Egypt, he's in Potiphar's house. He says, if we were at church and have vestal impression that Yahweh assists and hears all that we do and say and keeps a faithful record of our words and actions, and that we must need it all, we would fear to sin. Let the young ever remember that wherever they are and whatever they do, they are in the presence of the Yahweh. No part of our conduct escapes observation. We cannot hide our ways from the Most High. Human laws, though sometimes severe, are often transgressed without the detection, and hence with impunity, but not so with the law of Yahweh. For the deepest midnight is no cover for the guilty one. He may think himself alone, but unto every deed there is no unseen witness. The very motives of his heart are open unto the divine inspection. Every act, every word, every thought is distinctly marked as though there were only one person in the whole world and the attention of heaven were centered upon him. For the Joseph suffered for his integrity, for his tempter revenged herself by the accusing him of a foul crime and causing him to be thrust into prison. Had Potiphar believed his wife's charge against Joseph, the young Hebrew would have lost his life, but the modesty and uprightness that had uniformly characterized his conduct were proof of his innocence, and yet to save the reputation of his master's house, he was abandoned to disgrace and bondage. At the first, Joseph was treated with a great severity by his jailer. The psalmist says, his feet they hurt with the fetters. He was laid in the prison of iron until the time that his word came to pass, the word of Yahweh tried him. But Joseph's real character shines out even in the darkness of the dungeon. He held fast his faith and patience. His years of the faithful service had been most cruelly repaid. Yet this did not render him morose or distrustful. He had the peace that comes from the conscious innocence, and he trusted his case with the others. He did not brood upon his own wrong, but forgot his sorrow. And trying to lighten the sorrow of others, he found a work to do even in the prison. For Yahweh was preparing him in the school of the affliction. Folks, this is where I'm at today. I'm in the school of affliction. I have never been afflicted like this ever in my whole 85 years of my life. But I am now. I need the prayers of everybody that hears this sermon to keep to be able to be raised up out of this affliction that I have. I'm making improvement every day, but it's slow. For greater usefulness, and he did. Let's see, he found a work to do even in the prison. For the Yahweh was preparing him in the school of the affliction for the greater usefulness, and he did not refuse the needful discipline. In the prison, witnessing the results of the oppression and tyranny and the effects of the crime, he learned lessons of the justice, sympathy, and mercy that prepared him to exercise power with wisdom and compassion. Joseph gradually gained the confidence of the keeper of the prison and was finally entrusted with the charge of all the prisoners. It was the part he acted in the prison, the integrity of his daily life, and his sympathy for those who were in the trouble and distress that opened the way for his future prosperity and honor. Every ray of the light that we shed upon others and is reflected upon ourselves. Every kind and sympathizing words spoken for the sorrow, for every act to relieve the oppressed, and every gift to the needy. If prompted by a right motive, will result in a blessing to the giver. For the chief baker and chief butler of the king had been cast into prison for some offense, and they came under the Joseph's charge. One morning, observing that they appeared very sad, he kindly inquired the cause and was told that each had had a remarkable dream of which they were anxious to learn the significance. Do not interpretations belong to Yahweh? Said Joseph. Tell me them, I pray you. And each related his dream. Joseph made known its import. In 3 days, the butler was to be reinstated in his position and give the cup into the king Pharaoh's hand as before, but the chief baker would be put to death by the king's command. In both cases, the event occurred as foretold. For the king's cupbearer had professed the deepest gratitude to Joseph, both for the cheering interpretation of his dream and for the many acts of the kind attention, and in return, the latter referring in a most touching manner to his own unjust captivity, and entreated that his case be brought before the king. Think on me, he said, and it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this prison, for indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also have I done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon. The chief butler saw the dream fulfilled in every particular, but when restored to the royal favor, he thought no more of his benefactor. For 2 years longer, Joseph remained a prisoner. The hope that had been kindled in his heart gradually died out, and to all other trials was added the bitter sting of ingratitude. The divine hand was about to open the prison gates, for the king of Egypt had in one night two dreams of apparently pointing to the same event and seeming to foreshadow some great calamity. He could not determine their significance, yet they continued to trouble his mind. For the magicians and wise men of his realm could give no interpretation. The king's perplexity and distress increased, and terror spread throughout his palace. For the general agitation recalled to the chief butler's mind the circumstances of his own dream. With it came the memory of the Joseph, and a pang of remorse for his forgetfulness and ingratitude. He at once informed the king his own dream, and that of the chief baker had been interpreted by a Hebrew captive, and how the predictions had been fulfilled. For it was humiliating unto Pharaoh to turn away from the magicians and wise men of his kingdom to consult an alien and a slave. But he was ready to accept the lowliest service if his troubled mind might find relief. But as Joseph was immediately sent for, he put off his prison attire and shaved himself, for his hair had grown long during the period of his disgrace and confinement. He was then conducted to the presence of the king, and Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it, and I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. Yahweh shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Joseph replied to the king, reveals his humility and his faith in the Yahweh. He modestly disclaims the honor of possessing in himself superior wisdom. It is not in me. Yahweh alone can explain these mysteries. Pharaoh then proceeded to relate his dream. Behold, I stood upon the bank of the river, and behold, there came up out of the river seven kine, fat flesh, and well favored. And they fed in a meadow, and behold, seven other kine came up after them, poor, and very ill favored, and lean flesh, such as I never saw in all the land of Egypt of badness. And the lean and the ill favored kind did eat up the first seven fat kine, and when they had eaten them up, it could not be known that they had eaten them, but they were still ill-favored as at the beginning. So I awoke, and I saw in my dream, and behold, seven ears came up in the one stalk, full and good, and behold, seven ears with it, thin and blasted, with the east wind sprung up after them, and the thin ears devoured the seven good ears. And I told this unto the magicians, but there was none that could declare it to me. For the dream of the Pharaoh is one, said Joseph, for Yahweh has searched Pharaoh what he is about to do. There were to be 7 years of the great plenty. Field and garden would yield more abundantly than ever before, and this period was to be followed by the 7 years of famine. And the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of that famine fallen, for it shall be very grievous. For the repetition of the dream was evident, both of the certainty and nearness of the fulfillment. None therefore he continued, that Pharaoh looked out a man discreet and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land, and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the seven plenteous years, and let them gather all the food of these good years that come, and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities, and that food shall be for the store to the land against the 7 years of the famine. And the interpretation was so reasonable and consistent, and the policy which it recommended was so sound and shrewd, that its correctness could not be doubted. But who was to be entrusted with the execution of the plan? Upon the wisdom of this choice depended the nation's preservation. The king was troubled. Sometime the matter of the appointment was under consideration. Through the chief butler, the monarch had learned of the wisdom and prudence displayed by the Joseph in the management of the prison. It was evident that he possessed administrative ability in a preeminent degree. For the cupbearer, now filled with the self-reproach, endeavored to atone for his former ingratitude by the warmest praise of his benefactor, and further inquiry by the king proved the correctness of his report. In all the realm, Joseph was the only man gifted with the gift to point out the danger that threatened the kingdom and the preparation necessary to meet it. And the king was convinced that he was the one best qualified to execute the plans which he had proposed. It was evident that divine power was with him, and that there were none among the king's officers of the state so well qualified to conduct the affairs of the nation at this time, at this crisis. The fact that he was a Hebrew and a slave was of the little moment when weighed against his evident wisdom and sound judgment. Can we find such a one as this is a man in whom the Spirit of Yahweh is, said the king to his counselor? For the appointment was decided upon, and to Joseph the astonishing announcement was made. For as much as Yahweh has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over thy house, and according unto thy words shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. For the king proceeded and blessed Joseph with the insignia of his high office, and Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in the vestures of the fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck, and he made him to ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried before him, "Bow the knee." He made him master of his house and ruler of all his subjects, to bind his princes at his pleasure and teach his senators wisdom. From the dungeon, Joseph was exalted to be the ruler over all the land of Egypt. It was a position of a high honor, yet it was beset with a difficulty and peril. One cannot stand up on a lofty height without danger, as the tempest leaves unharmed the lowly flower of the valley, while it uproots the stately tree upon the mountain top. So those who have maintained their integrity in the human life may be dragged down to the pit by the temptations of the still world of success and honor. But the Joseph character bore the test alike of the adversity and prosperity. The same fidelity to Yahweh was manifest when he stood in the palace of the Pharaoh as when he was in a prisoner's cell. he was still a stranger in a heathen land separated from his kindred, the worshippers of Yahweh, but he fully believed that the divine hand had directed his steps, and in constant reliance upon the Yahweh, he faithfully discharged the duties of his position. Through Joseph, the attention of the king and great men of Egypt was directed to the true Yahweh. And though they adhered to their idolatry, they learned to respect the principles revealed in the life and character of the worshippers of the Yahweh. How was Joseph unable to make such a record of firmness, of character, of rightness and wisdom? In his early years, he had consulted duty rather than inclination, and the integrity, the simple trust, the noble nature of the youth bore fruit in the deeds of the man. A pure and simple life had favored the vigorous developments of both physical and intellectual powers. Communing with Yahweh through his works and the contemplation of the grand truths entrusted to the inheritors of the faith had elevated and ennobled his spiritual nature, broadening and strengthening the mind as no other study could do. Faithful attention to the duty in every station, from the lowliest to the most exalted, had been training every power for his highest service. He who lives in accordance with the Creator's will is securing unto himself the truest and noblest development of the character. For the fear of the Yahweh, that is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding. There are few who realize the influence of the little things of the life upon the development of the church. Nothing with which we have to do is really small. The very circumstances that we meet day by day are designed to test our faithfulness and to qualify us for the greater trust by the adherence unto the principle and the transactions of the ordinary life. The mind becomes accustomed to hold the claim of the duty above those of the pleasure and inclination. Minds thus discipline are not wavering between right and wrong, like the reed trembling in the wind. They are loyal to duty because they have trained themselves to the habits of fidelity and truth. By the faithfulness in that which is least, they acquire strength to be faithful in the greater matters. An upright character is of the greater worth than the gold of the ophir. Without it, none can rise to an honorable eminence. But character is not inherited. It cannot be bought. Moral excellence and fine and mental qualities are not the result of the accident, for the most precious gifts are of no value unless they are improved. For the formation of a noble character is a work of a lifetime and must be the result of the diligence and persevering effort. Yahweh gives opportunity. Success depends upon the use made of them. End of chapter 20. Now we go into Joseph and his brothers, chapter 21. Joseph and his brothers, chapter 21, Patriarchs and Prophets, Ellen G. White, on page 224, said at the very opening of the fruitful years began the preparation for the approaching famine. With the direction of Joseph, immense storehouses were erected in all the principal places throughout the land of Egypt, and ample arrangements were made for the preserving the surplus of the expected harvest. For the same policy was continued during the 7 years of the plenty, until the amount of the grain laid in the store was beyond computation. And now the 7 years of the dearth began to come according unto the Joseph's prediction, and the dearth was in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. And when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried unto Pharaoh for the bread, and Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, go unto Joseph, what he saith unto you do. And the famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians, for the famine extended unto the land of the Canaan, and was severely felt in that part of the country where the Jacob dwelt. Hearing of the abundant provision made by the king of the Egypt, 10 of the Jacob's sons journeyed thither to purchase grain. On their arrival, they were directed unto the king's deputy with other applicants. They came to present themselves before the ruler of the land, and they bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. Joseph knew his brethren, but they knew not him. His Hebrew name had been exchanged for the one bestowed upon him by the king, and there was little resemblance between the prime minister of the Egypt and the shipping whom they had sold to the Ishmaelites. As Joseph saw his brother stooping and making obeisance, his dream came unto his mind, and the scene of the past rose vividly before him, and his keen eye surveying the group discovered that the Benjamin was not among them, that he also fallen a victim to the treacherous cruelty of those savage men, for he determined to learn the truth. "Ye are spies," he said sternly. "To see the nakedness of the land, you are come." They answered, "Nay, my master, but to buy food, or thy servants come. We are all one man's sons. We are true men. Thy servants are no spies." He wished to learn if they possessed the same haughty spirit as when he was with them, and also to draw from them some information in regard to their home. Yet he well knew how deceptive their statements might be, for he repeated the charge, and they replied, "Thy servants are 12 brethren, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our Father and one is not. Professing to doubt the truthfulness of their story and to still look upon them as spies, the governor declared that he would prove them by requiring them to remain in Egypt till one of the number should go and bring their youngest brother down. If they would not consent to this, they were to be treated as spies. But under such an arrangement, the sons of Jacob could not agree, since the time required for the carrying it out would cause their families to suffer for food, and who among them would undertake the journey alone, leaving his brothers in prison? How could he meet his father's under such circumstances? It appeared probable that they were to be put to death or to be made slaves, and if Benjamin were brought, it might be only to share their fate. They decided to remain and suffer together rather than bring additional sorrow upon their father by the loss of his only remaining son, for they were accordingly cast into prison, where they remained 3 days. During the years since Joseph had been separated from his brothers, those sons of Jacob had changed in the character, and this turbulent, deceptive, cruel, and revengeful they had been. But now, when tested by the adversity, they were shown to be unselfish, true to one another, devoted to their father and themselves, middle-aged men, subject unto his authority. For the 3 days in the Egyptian prison were the days of the bitter sorrow as the brothers reflected upon their past sin. Unless Benjamin could be produced, their conviction as spies appeared certain, and they had little hope of gaining their father's consent to Benjamin's absence. On the third day, Joseph caused the brothers to be brought before him. He dared not detain them long. Already his father and the families with him might be suffering for food. This do and live, he said. For I fear Yahweh, if you be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison. Go ye, carry corn for the famine of your houses, but bring your youngest brother unto me. So shall your words be verified, and you shall not die. This proposition they agreed to accept, though expressing little hope that their father would let Benjamin return with them. Joseph had communicated with them through an interpreter, and having no thought that the governor understood them, they conversed freely with one another in his presence. They accused themselves in regard to the treatment of the Joseph. We are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us. Reuben, who had formed the plan for the delivering him at Dothan, added, speak I not unto you any saying, do not sin against the child, and ye would not hear. Therefore, behold, also his blood is required. Joseph listened, could not control his emotion, and he went out and he wept. On his return, he commanded that Simeon be bound before them, and again committed to prison. In the cruel treatment of their brother Simeon had been the instigator and chief actor, and it was for this reason that the choice fell upon him. Before permitting his brothers to depart, Joseph gave direction that they should be supplied with the grain, and also that each man's money should be secretly placed in the mouth of his sack. For the provender for the beast on the homeward journey was also supplied. On the way, one of the company opening his sack was surprised to find his bag of silver. On his making known the fact to the others, they were alarmed and perplexed, and said one to another, "What is this that Yahweh hath done unto us? Should they regard it as a token of good from the Yahweh, or had he suffered it to occur to punish them for their sin and plunge them still deeper in affliction?" They acknowledged that the Yahweh had been, or had seen, their sins, and that he was now punishing them. Jacob was anxiously awaiting the return of his son, and on their arrival, the whole encampment gathered eagerly around them. As they related to their father all that had occurred, alarm and apprehension filled every heart. For the conduct of the Egyptian governor seemed to imply some evil design, and their fears were confirmed when, as they opened their sacks, the owner's money was found in each. In his distress, the aged father exclaimed, "May have you bereaved of my children. Joseph is not, and Simeon is not, and ye will take Benjamin away? All these things are against me." Reuben answered, "Slay my two sons. If I bring him not to thee, deliver him into my hand, and I will bring him to thee again." This rash speech did not relieve the mind of Jacob. His answer was, "My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is left alone. If mischief befall him by the way in the which you go, then shall you bring down my gray hairs with a sorrow to the grave." But the drought continued, and in the process of time, the supply of the grain that had been brought from Egypt was nearly exhausted, for the sons of Jacob well knew that it would be in vain to return to Egypt without the danger. They had little hope of changing their father's resolution, and they awaited the issue in silence. Deeper and deeper grew the shadow of the approaching famine. In the anxious faces of all in the encampment, the old man read their news. At last he said, "Georgia, buy us a little food." They answered, "The man did solemnly protest on their sin, 'You shall not see my face except your brother be with you.' Thou wilt not send our brother with us? We will go down and buy thee food, but if thou wilt not send him, we will not go down. For the man said unto us, 'You shall not see my face except your brother be with you.'" Seeing that his father's resolution began to waver, he added, "Send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you, and thou, and also our little one." And he offered to be surety for his brother, and to bear the blame forever if he failed to restore Benjamin to his father. Jacob could no longer withhold his consent, and he directed his sons to prepare for the journey. He bade them also take to the ruler a present of such things as the famine-wasted country afforded: a little balm and a little honey, spices and myrrh, nuts and almonds, also a double quantity of the money. "Take also your brother," he said, "arise, go again unto the man." As his sons were about to depart on a doubtful journey, the aged father arose and, raising his hands to heaven, uttered the prayer, "Yahweh Almighty, give you mercy before the man, that he may send away your other brother and Benjamin. If I be bereaved of my children, I am bereaved." Again, they journeyed to Egypt and presented themselves before the Joseph. As his eye fell upon Benjamin, his own mother's son, he was deeply moved, for he concealed his emotion, however, but ordered that they be taken to his house, and that preparation be made for them to dine with him. Upon being conducted to the governor's palace, the brothers were greatly alarmed, fearing that they were to be called to account for the money found in their sacks. They thought it might have been intentionally placed there to furnish occasion for making them slaves. In their distress, they consulted with the steward of the house, relating to him the circumstances of their visit to Egypt, and in the proof of their innocence, informed him that they had brought back the money found in their sacks, also other money to buy food. And they added, "We cannot tell who put our money in our sacks." The man replied, "Peace be to you, fear not. Your Yahweh and the Yahweh of your father have given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money." Their anxiety was relieved, and when Simeon, who had been released from prison, joined them, they felt that Yahweh was indeed gracious unto them. When the governor again met them, they presented their gifts and humbly bowed themselves to him to the earth. Again, his dreams came to his mind, and after saluting his guest, he hastened to ask, is your father well, the old man of whom you escaped? Is he yet alive? Thy servant, our father, is in a good health. He is yet alive, was the answer, and they again made obeisance. Then his eye rested upon Benjamin, and he said, is this your younger brother of whom you spake unto me? For the Lord be gracious unto thee, my son, that overpowered by the feelings of the tenderness, he could say no more. He entered into his chambers and wept there. Having recovered his self-possession, he returned and all proceeded to the feast. By the laws of the estate, the Egyptians were forbidden to eat with people of any other nation, for the sons of the Jacob had therefore a table by themselves, while the governor, on account of his high rank, ate by himself, and the Egyptians also had separate tables. When all were seated, the brothers were surprised to see that they were arranged in the exact order according to their ages. Joseph sent messages unto them from before him, that Benjamin was five times as much as any of theirs. By this token of the favor to Benjamin, he hoped to ascertain if the youngest brother was regarded with the envy, hated, that had been manifested toward him, that hatred that had been manifested toward himself, still supposing that the Joseph did not understand their language. The brothers freely conversed with one another. Thus he had a good opportunity to learn their real feelings. Still he desired to test them further, and before their departure he ordered that his own drinking cup of the silver should be concealed in the sack of the youngest. Joyfully they set out on their return. Simeon and Benjamin were with them. Their animals were laden with the grain, and all felt that they had safely escaped the perils that had seemed to surround them. But they had only reached the outskirts of the city, and they were overtaken by the governor's steward, who uttered the scathing inquiry, wherefore have you rewarded evil for good? Is not this it in which my master drinketh, and whereby indeed he divineth? Ye have done evil in so doing. This cup was supposed to possess the power of the detecting any poisonous substance placed therein. At that day, cups of this kind were highly valued as a safeguard against murder by the poison. To the steward's accusation, the travelers answered, wherefore, saith my master these words, Yahweh forbid that thy servants should do according to this thing. Behold, the money which we found in our sack's mouth, we brought again unto thee out of the land of Canaan. How then should we steal out of thy master's house silver or gold? With the whomsoever of thy servants it be found, both let him die, and we also will be by thy Lord's bondmen. Now also let it be according unto your word, said the steward, he with whom it is found shall be my servant, and you shall be blended. The search began immediately. They speedily took down Every man is set to the ground, and the steward examined, each beginning with the Benjamin, and taking him in order down to that of the youngest. In Benjamin's sack, the cup was found. The brothers rent their garments in the token of utter wretchedness, and slowly returned to the city. By their own promise, Benjamin was doomed to a life of slavery, for they followed the steward to the palace, and finding the governor yet there, they prostrated themselves before him. "What deed is this that you have done?" He said, "Wot you not that such a man as I can certainly divine?" Joseph designed to draw from them an acknowledgment of their sin. He had never claimed the power of divination, but was willing to have them believe that he could read the secrets of their lives. Judah answered, "What shall we say unto my master? What shall we speak? Or how shall we clear ourselves? Yahweh has found out the iniquity of thy servant. Behold, we are my master's servants, both we and he also with whom the cup is found. Yahweh forbid that I should do so," was the reply. "But the man in whose hand the cup is found, he shall be my servant. And as for you, get you up in peace unto your father." In his deep distress, Judah now drew near to the river and exclaimed, "O my master, let thy servant, I pray thee, speak a little word in my master's ear, and let not thine anger burn against thy servant. For thou art even as the Pharaoh." In words of the touching eloquence, he described his father's grief at the loss of Joseph, and his reluctance to let Benjamin come with him to Egypt, as he was the only son left of his mother, Rachel, whom Jacob so dearly loved. "Now therefore," he said, "when I come to thy servant, my father, and the lad be not with us, seeing that his life is bound up in the lad's life, it shall come to pass, when he seeth that the lad is not with us, that he will die, and thy servants shall bring down the gray hairs of thy servant our father with a sorrow to the grave. For thy servant became surety for the lad unto my father, saying, if I bring him not unto thee, then I shall bear the blame to my father forever. Now therefore I pray thee, let thy servant abide instead of the lad, a bondman to my master, and let the lad go up with his brethren. For how shall I go up to my father, and the lad be not with me? Lest peradventure I see the evil that shall come on my father." Joseph is satisfied. He has seen in his brothers the fruits of the true repentance. Upon hearing Judah's noble offer, he gave order that all that these men should withdraw. Then weeping aloud, he cried, "I am Joseph, if my father yet live." His brothers stood motionless, dubbed with sure and amazement, the ruler of Egypt, their brother Joseph, and they had envied and would have murdered, and finally said, sold as a slave. All their ill treatment of him passed before them. They remembered how they had despised his dream and had labored to prevent their fulfillment. Yet they had acted their part in the fulfilling these dreams, and now that they were completely in his power, he would no doubt avenge the wrong that he had suffered. Seeing their confusion, he said kindly, "Come near to me, I pray you." And as they came near, he continued, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourself that you sold one hither. For Yahweh did send me before you to preserve life, feeling that they had already suffered enough for their cruelty toward him. He nobly sought to banish their fears and lessen the bitterness of their self-reproach. For the 2 years, he continued, had the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in the which there shall neither be Aaron nor harvest. And Yahweh sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and to save your life by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but Yahweh, and he has made me a father to the Pharaoh and a master of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Haste ye and go up to my father and say unto him, Thus saith my thy son Joseph, Yahweh hath made me a lord, master of all Egypt. Come down unto me, tarry not, and thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen. And thou shalt be dear unto me, thou, and thy children, and thy children's children, and thy flocks, and thy herds, and all that thou hast, and there will I nourish thee. For yet there are 5 years of the famine, lest thou and thy household, and all that thou hast come to poverty. And behold, your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin, that it is my mouth that speaketh unto you. And he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept upon his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brethren and wept upon them, and after that his brethren talked with him. They humbly confessed their sins and entreated his forgiveness. They had long suffered anxiety and remorse, and now they rejoice that he was still alive. For the news of what had taken place was quickly carried to the king, who, eager to manifest his gratitude to Joseph, confirmed the governor's invitation to his family saying, "The good of all the land of Egypt is yours." The brothers were sent away, abundantly supplied with the provision, with the provision and carriages and everything necessary for the removal of all their families and attendants to Egypt. On Benjamin's Joseph bestowed more valuable gifts than upon the others. Then, fearing that disputes would arise among them on the homeward journey, he gave them, as they were about to leaving him, the charge: "See that you fall not out by the way." For the sons of Jacob returned to their father with the joyful tidings: "Joseph is yet alive, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt." At first the aged man was overwhelmed. He could not believe what he heard. But when he saw the long train of the wagons and loaded animals, and when Benjamin was with him once more, he was convinced, and in the fullness of his joy exclaimed, "It is enough. Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I will go and see him before I die." This brings in verse 30, so our contact is the 11th hour call. I've never done a stick on an audio archive. We're going to close now.